Welcome to SMQB's episode 210. Milk's Gators won the championship. The UConn women won their 12th championship, and Ovi broke what many thought would be Wayne Gretzky's unbreakable career goals record. We have our good friend from Canada, Moose, to talk about that. But before we get into that, let me throw some love to our sponsors, Injury Board, the best networking group for premier trial lawyer firms. If you want to get in touch with them, check it out at injuryboard.org, and Digital Law Marketing, which is a fantastic website creator and digital marketing firm for law firms looking to turn their hard-earned money into good cases. Before we get to you, Moose, who are you bringing to the bar this week?
I'm bringing Wayne Gretzky.
What do you want to say to Wayne?
Not Ovi?
No. No, I want to talk about Wayne. I mean, I want to know what it was like to pass Gordie Howe. I want to know what it was like to score 92 goals and over 200 points in a year. I want to know what it was like to be the greatest of all time. Ovi's the greatest goal scorer of all time, but Gretzky's still the greatest of all time.
Well, we're going to get there.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
All right. I'm setting you guys up.
Milk, who are you taking to the bar?
I am bringing University of Florida Athletic Director Scott Strickland, who I have been very hard on this podcast over the last 12 months for his hire of Billy Napier. But he got one right for sure in Todd Golden, who did an unbelievable coaching job this year, especially in the tournament. And congratulate him and see what his plan is to keep him around, because he's going to become a very popular coach. If not already.
How about you, House?
I'm going to bring MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred to the bar. I read an article interview with him this past weekend, and it sounds like there's a lot of changes coming to baseball. They've got problems. The viewership, the competitive imbalance, there's a lot of things going on with baseball. I'm very into the beginning of this baseball season, particularly because I've got a team that matters with the Phillies, but I think where baseball is going and some of these changes from international play to, robotic umpires, it's a really fascinating read. If anybody gets any of our listeners get the chance, New York Times did an interview of Manfred. And I would just say that I'd love to pick his brain to see whether or not he thinks that change is going to be enough to bring a younger audience into watching Major League Baseball.
Salary cap.
I am going to take to the bar Mike Malone. Two years ago, he led the Denver Nuggets to a world championship. And today, the Nuggets fired Mike Malone and the GM. You talk about what have you done for me lately. I'd love to know his reaction to that. Pope, who are you taking to the bar?
Oh, man, I'm taking Kelvin Sampson. I feel bad for him. What a great run. I mean, I'm going to congratulate him for knocking the evil empire off with a great, great final to that game, and console him. I don't know what plan they had drawn up. Obviously, it didn't go as designed by a jumper where the guy drops the ball because he doesn't want to walk. But just a class act, and I would love to buy him a drink and thank him for a fun run.
All right, Moose. We're going to give you your opportunity to finish your earlier thoughts about Gretzky. But before that happens, tell us, you think anyone is going to top this scoring record again? Given the fact that, what is Ovi, 40?
He's 39. He's got, 42 or 43 goals this year. Does not look like he's slowing down. So it's impossible to make that prediction because I don't know where he's going to end. If he breaks his leg tomorrow and ends at 896, yeah, I think it can be broken. If he gets up to 1,050, 1,100 goals, who knows? Probably not. But you know what? Someone said, I saw someone over the weekend say, hockey's the type of sport that there's already been someone born who will break that record. I don't believe that. I think this is the game has changed so much that I don't know if this one's ever going to be broken.
It's a grueling sport, and people are making more money. It's hard to see these current stars saying, I'm going to play till I'm 40 years old.
Well, you know what? Hockey players are different, and it was proven during the Four Nations.
Yep.
There's no such thing as load management, and I'm not trying to take a shot at basketball players right now or baseball players, though. It's easy to do. I mean, listen, I mean, you know, the story of Freddie Freeman going on the IL because he tweaked his ankle going into the shower the other day. I mean, you know, first of all,
it can be slippery.
Don't put that out there. Say he give a fake.
Oh, story. You wanted to say it as a lower body injury, the way NHL deceives its fans.
It's a lower body injury, but no, it's a function of hockey players are just built differently. They're going to keep playing. You know, remember, like Bison was saying, do you think Ovi will be a healthy scratch Sunday? There was no way he was going to be a healthy scratch Sunday.
Okay, setting aside his competitive drive, you know, Bison can't join us. He's a season ticket holder or package plan to the Caps.
Yep.
He had bought a ticket for the next nosebleed seats, like $350 just to see the next one. He's been a religious fan, as are many of the Caps fans, following Ovi through so many of those goals. Just from a fan standpoint, do you think it was right for him to break that record away at, you know, the Islanders versus doing it back home?
Absolutely, because there's no guarantee that if he sat Sunday, that he would be able to get through the next game. Like, I mean, it's a grueling sport.
Could have broken his ankle getting into the shower.
Or you know what? You do a knee on knee in the first 2-3 minutes of the game, and you've got an ACL injury, and suddenly you're not breaking the record. You've tied the record. So yeah, I don't have an issue. I mean, obviously, it's one of those things that when your team is on the verge of a championship and they're playing an away game, do you want to see them win it away or wait till they get home? Well, there's no guarantee they're going to win it at home.
Well, maybe Nate should have gotten on a plane and gone to New York.
Oh, we're going to get there. Maybe that's the solution. Get there, because I'm curious to hear what San Antonio was like. So we'll get there.
Oh, okay.
I got to tell you, though, when the game ended the other night and they were going to New York, I went on StubHub just to see the prices because I was thinking about going down. But when I saw the ticket prices at $1,200, $1,300 for nosebleeds, I was like, okay, I can watch it on TV. But yeah, I think you got to break it when you can break it.
Let's pick up on your bar conversation with Wayne Gretzky. Where does this put Ovi in the big picture, in the history of the NHL, Mount Rushmore of NHL players? I know you say Gretzky's the greatest of all time. I don't disagree with that. There are people out there who say Ovi's a forward. He's not playing defense. He's just shooting. I don't agree with that either. He'll mix it up with anybody.
So Ovi, now the all-time leading goal scorer, is third all-time in hits, but he's like 1,200 hits behind the all-time leader. Ovi's a generational talent. Is he in the top four of all time? I don't know about that.
Who is, in your opinion?
To me, I've got Gretzky or Lemieux as the top three. And then the question is it Gordie Howe?
Mr. Hockey.
Right. Like, and because it's so, because you're talking about a different type of game between the 50s and later on, there's an argument that, you know, Sidney Crosby could be in there. Is Sidney a better player than Ovi, even though Ovi's got the all-time goal scoring record? That's good talk radio topics.
Yager's
one of them. Yeah, for sure.
One argument that's been kicked around with this Gretzky versus Ovi thing, and by the way, I'm going to go on record and say it's not just a generational thing for me. It is Gretzky. And one of the reasons why is Ovi's got one championship. And I think we're not the biggest hockey pod, but we all know enough about hockey. If we went around and talked about some of the players that were on Gretzky's Edmonton Oilers team, we could rattle them off. If we went around to go on who are the Caps teams that Ovi's been on, they wouldn't roll off the tongue because Gretzky made everybody around him better. He just did. And I don't know that you can say that about Ovi. It's not to say he's a selfish player or anything like that, but how, okay, it's amazing that he got one Stanley Cup championship, but I don't know how you can put him in the same breath as Gretzky beyond the goal scoring based on what did he do for his team?
Well, I mean, those are all very fair comments, I think. He did make other players better because of all his goals. Certain guys racked up assists that would not have had the assists because of his shooting skills. But I do not put him in the same category as a Gretzky, a Lemieux, those guys revolutionized the game. They changed the game. Ovi did. I don't think Ovi's changed the game at all. He is. I mean, there is an argument to be made that Mike Bossy was as great a goal scorer as Alex Ovechkin.
I'll make that argument.
But very different players. Bossy was ballet on skates, and Ovi is a torpedo. But Bossy was probably the purest goal scorer ever in the NHL before the argument of Ovechkin. But his career was cut short by back injury.
Yep.
And that's one of the things that Ovi and Crosby and Lemieux and Gretzky have all had is longevity. Bobby Orr would probably be the greatest of all time, but for injuries.
Well, let me ask Pope and House and Milk to join in this conversation.
I'm sorry, does Milk know anything?
What other unbreakable records are out there, do you guys think?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask about other.
No. I'll give you one. I think the Major League Baseball wins record set in 1968 by Denny McLain at 30, he went 31-6.
That's not
going to be broken in our lifetime.
No. Because
they don't pitch
the way we have pitchers now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on others that are?
I mean, people flirted with it, but I don't think they're going to break DiMaggio's consecutive hitting streak. I think it's in good shape. I mean, stood the test of time.
Yeah.
People.
But it's breakable.
Is it?
I mean, there's
people flirted with
the
it. No
the
one's
wins
got
aren't
it.
Breakable.
Yeah, I mean,
because
if somebody like Pete Rose didn't break it, who's going
to
break it?
He's the closest, right? He was the closest. What did he get to, 46, 45?
Yeah. I mean, Tony Gwynn didn't come close.
You know, I don't think anyone's going to hit 400.
No.
You know, because of the way pitching is. You know, they have all these specialists that come in for an inning or for three batters, and you know it's. I think that's not going to be broken either. I don't think Cy Young's record of was 400. Was it 419 wins? I don't think you're ever going to see another 300 game winner.
That's very likely. It's going to be very, very rare.
I used to think this one was easy, not easy, was going to be broken, but now I'm concerned. Not concerned, but I may not. And I'm talking about Jack's record of 18 majors. I thought Tiger would obviously break that. He didn't.
Right.
A lot of times the answer
that
is money. There's so much money in golf right now that it's hard to imagine someone playing that long.
Or that well for that long.
Or dominating.
Yeah.
Moose, you said at the top that it's conceivable that depending on where Ovi stops with this goal scoring record, that it's who is in the game right now that has that kind of pace remotely?
So there's a story in Toronto that Austin Matthews in the same is ahead right now of Ovi's pace at the same age. And then Matthews came out and said, don't you guys dare put me in Ovi's category, which is the right thing to say. So he's the only one right now. But again, and Austin Matthews has been pretty healthy over the first 8-9 years of his career. Incredible goal scorer. But he is the only one right now. Because someone like McDavid is more of a Gretzky-like player where he piles up assists rather than goals at the same rate. I don't think there's anyone. I don't know if Matthews has that longevity there. But again, there might be a kid who's 13, 14 years old right now who is going to come up because, you know what, the people are better skaters now. They're in better shape. And again, it's and then you know what the other thing is, as the league gets more and more diluted, because they're talking about adding teams, that's a function also. And I'm not taking anything away from OV, but you know, Gretzky played in a 21 team league with no virtually no overtime, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, where OV did. And so there are differences. Gretzky played through the clutch and grab of the 1980 of the late 80s and early 90s with the New Jersey Devils, where there was no place to move on the ice. So who knows where the game's going to develop? You know, are you end up, you know, who knows if you're going to end up expanding to Europe? And if you put these guys on European ice surfaces that are much bigger, it changes the game. So who knows where it's going to go?
I'm pretty sure if Bison was here, he would say in Ovi's favor that he didn't join the NHL till he was 20. So he missed out on some teenage years, partially because of a late birthday. And he missed
and the strike.
Yeah, and the strike and COVID. So there's another 80 plus goals that he conceivably could have scored.
And listen, he's, because of technology and the way to train, look, he's not slowing down. He's going to get close to 50 goals this year. And so if he slows down to 35 over the next 2 years per season, that's another 70. So,
all right, I got a non-hockey one for you. Rushing yards. 18,355 career rushing yards. Guess who has it?
Emmett.
Not going to be broken.
I think it could be broken.
Running backs. Running backs don't
last. Toby might disagree with that.
I disagree.
A, the running back's not the premium that it used to be, and B, they don't last nearly as long. The closest is Frank Gore trails him by 2,355 yards.
He's coming back this
just
year.
Recently retired.
No, he's coming back.
He just had a great grandchild, I think.
Well, first of all, one of the reasons that could be broken is the NFL is just going to keep adding games to the season. And so, you know, if you have 18 game seasons and you have a running back like a Saquon Barkley, I mean, we didn't think that Dickerson's record was going to be broken, or, you know, Terrell Davis's total yards for a season. Saquon could have broken Dickerson's and did break the all yards for a whole season.
But that's not longevity.
Yeah, you're right. I think longevity of running backs is decreased, but I think that one is within reach. It's a harder one. That's definitely a harder one to reach for sure.
It's so hard to stay healthy.
Career strikeouts, 5,714, Nolan Ryan. Nobody will ever get close to that.
Nope. All right, let's move on to Milk's favorite topic. The Final Four, the championship game this past weekend.
What was San Antonio like, Milk?
Yeah.
You were there, right?
How was the game? You, of course, went.
I watched the game with my boys at home. Mm. So I promised them I would do that. Mm. Milk. Although I did really want to get on a plane yesterday.
Congratulations, buddy. I know that was exciting for you and your boys. So Hal sent around a text or a tweet earlier today that pointed out that the Gators are the first modern era team to win a national championship without a top 100 recruit on the team. Milk, what is their special sauce? Why are they? They're like the cardiac kids. How do they suck so badly in the first half and then come back and win these games?
Well, I mean, it's like beyond that. I mean, they had other than Norfolk State, the first game, the 16 seed, every game was a challenge. They played terrible first halves every single game they played, to horrible turnovers. Last night was one of the worst games they've played. Mm. Down 12 in the second half. They led for 64 seconds the entire... I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how the hell they won this game. Clayton, no field goals until 8 minutes left in the game. 13 turnovers to Houston's 9. And they score under 70 for the second time all season because of Houston's unbelievable game plan. And by the way, props to Sampson, because he played the exact game he wanted to play. Yeah. Took Clayton completely out of that game.
Right. And left, who's the guy with the sling blade haircut? Thomas Hoff. He left that guy wide open at the top of the three-point line for the first three quarters. He refused to shoot it when he got it. And there was nobody guarding him all the way down to the foul line. And he, instead of just pulling up for a jumper, he drove into the teeth of the defense and turned it over like for the first quarter and a half.
Well, Elijah Martin really saved our ass too, by the way, when Clayton was taken out of that game.
Oh, Richard saved your ass.
Yeah.
Those 14 points in the first half, y'all were going to get blown out.
I thought we were going to get blown out in the second half. I just, you know, you're hitting it on the head, House's tweet that he sent out. I mean, these guys, if you think about it, I mean, House a three-star recruit. Clayton comes from Iona. Will Richard, three-star recruit out of Belmont that comes in. Elijah Martin was a zero-star recruit, comes from FAU. And I just think this is a team that very well, first of all, Todd Golden, to be able to coach guys like that and bring them together to do what they did in this tournament, unbelievable coaching job, especially what he did in the second half of games. But this is a team that was out to prove something. These weren't five-star guys. They didn't have the you know, Clayton got a lot of name recognition in the tournament, but I mean, hell, I remember talking to House. We were fishing a couple months ago, and you were like, "Who's your best player?" I'm like, "Walter Clayton," and you're like, "Oh, okay, yeah, I don't really know that guy." And I mean, I think that's what drove this. I mean, this is a kind of you bring a bunch of guys together that are trying to prove a point, that have been crapped on their entire career, put them together with a great coach. I mean, this is like a generational kind of thing. You just don't see this happen. You don't see these types of guys get together, and they played their ass out off and won somehow, pulled it out of that. Now, you can say Houston blew it at the end, I guess, but I would argue that they had the two best defensive plays of the tournament, the last two possessions that Houston had. And Clayton was involved in both of those, by the way.
True or false, though, Walter Clayton's draft stock went down as a result of that game.
I don't buy into that.
As a result of the final game? Yep. No, I don't think
he was taken out. He was double teamed in the entire first. And when we needed him with 8 minutes to go in that game, he hit 2 3-pointers in under a minute, by the way, to win that game for us.
Overall, can we agree? Congratulations. A ring is a ring. A championship is a championship. Right.
God, here we
go. No.
God, this sounds like
I'm saying
overall, could we agree?
Overall, the final four were pretty crappy. I'm not saying games, but the play of the teams. No. Yes, absolutely. You had in the Duke game and in the Florida game, the last 2 minutes, the last 2-3 minutes. You had number one seeds in this tournament that could not execute in basketball, period.
A lot of it that had to do with the other team.
Oh, come on.
Right.
Disrupting defense.
Well, I'm with House in the end of the Duke game.
Inbound
a goddamn
ball.
When I was in seventh grade, I learned how to break a full-court press. They look like they'd never even been instructed on that.
I mean, a number one seed double dribbling at the end of the – I mean, it was just
– But that's what Houston was known for, yeah, right?
Right. So you know it's coming. You know it's coming. The guy from Duke who was inbounding the ball looked like he was going to faint from anxiety. Then you call a timeout and get somebody else to
– I mean, well, watch that last 20-second sequence of last night. They did not need a three. They needed a two to tie the game. You had nobody under the hoop. Cryer held the ball for 10 seconds when he got over the midline. Nobody was moving. Sampson was not coaching. Nobody was doing anything. That's a number one seed not executing for a championship.
And that was the third possession in a row that they didn't even get a shot up.
It was crappy basketball.
Yep. The one before that, though, was Florida's defense.
Yeah,
causing
I mean, I give it to Florida. Good defense,
yes,
for sure.
Yeah.
Cryer just turned the ball over. He tried to go underneath and just lost his handle.
Well, he dribbled.
I mean,
he did what Duke did.
He dribbled right into the
sideline, which means now they have an extra defender.
Right.
Duke was passing. When the Duke was trying to beat the press, the guy panicked and passed the ball to somebody on the wing, and now he's trapped on the sideline.
Look, our listeners don't want to hear me pound on Duke, so I'm not going to. But the only thing I can say about Duke in defense of what happened to them is they did not play in many or hardly any crunch games. They were not seasoned for that like other teams were. because the ACC sucked. They didn't have any competitive games. I mean, they won their games by average of over 20 points. So there was always a concern when Duke came down to crunch time that Duke would fail to execute. And that's exactly what happened. They looked like a team that wasn't ready to the coach either didn't have them ready or they weren't able to execute when it really mattered.
Pope, you heard Kelvin Sampson take a straight up shot at the ACC after they won the semifinal game and said that we didn't play in some whatever league he described the ACC as, and he was boasting on the Big 12. Do you think that's a fair criticism of the ACC this year relative to the Big 12?
I do. I mean, look at the three teams other than Duke. None of them made it past the first round.
Yeah.
Look at Texas Tech. Should it be Florida?
Well,
they should have beat Florida.
The Gators deserve a lot of credit. They did hang tough and pull out some really – I mean, they could have lost to UConn. UConn looked great for a while in that game.
They had poise, and they just seemed totally relaxed. And you had older guys on the court. All those, you know, Florida's going to lose a ton of people. I think you're right. I mean, Houston just seemed to they went nuts at the end. You know, they couldn't keep it together, whereas Florida kept it chill. We know we're going to win this game. We've done this all year. We've done this all tournament. You know, they've been doing this since the SEC tournament, where they were down to Alabama, came back and won by 20. They've just been in it before, and I think Houston just crumbled.
I thought Kelvin Sampson coached his ass off in this tournament until the end of that game. And then I agree with House. I think he froze.
We don't know what game plan he drew up for the final play.
But I thought he had a great game plan.
It may have just been disrupted. He may have said, let's try to get it underneath, and they just felt like they couldn't based on the pressure. I don't know. It's hard to say, you know, it was Sampson's fault. They didn't execute.
I thought they shut down Clayton. They forced a ton of turnovers. I mean, I think they had a pretty good game plan. They just, you know, Florida had one of the best offenses in the country.
Well, let's not forget.
And one of the best players in the country.
Let's not forget to give some props to the women. In the women's finals, UConn smoked a team that had been to the Final Four five straight times in South Carolina under Dawn Staley, 82-59. It was a straight up ass whipping. AZ Fudd, who was the most outstanding player of the Final Four, Paige Beckers, and their new freshman star in the making, Sarah Strong, outscored the entire South Carolina team. Beckers scored 477 points in the tournament, which is the most in UConn history, third in history all time between what two players? Can you guys name the top two scorers in the March Madness for the women?
In March Madness history?
Yeah, for one tournament.
Caitlin?
Dinah Taurasi?
Caitlin is
Rebecca
one.
Lobo?
Caitlin's number one. Mm. Paige Beckers is number three. And number two?
Elena Deladon?
Shamika Holzclaw.
Shamika Holzclaw. Okay.
So here's my question. They've now won 12 championships, which is remarkable. And Gino Auriemma is 71 years old. He just signed a four-year extension. I mean, get a life, man. What is left to do? Get a hobby.
How many did Pat Summitt win?
Less than 12? 12. No, less than 12.
Less than?
12 is the record.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's like John Wooden.
I was curious if he was chasing something.
Maybe that one will never be broken.
It may not be. Anyway, it was a great game. It was great to see Paige Beckers finally get her championship. She is the first superstar that Gino's coached who didn't have one. Now she does.
Rooster, you can come to 2025 Champions Dinner too. So far, me, you, and Milk have a championship for this year.
Yeah.
When's the menu revealed?
It's coming soon.
It's a very tangential awesome. But win there.
All right. Any more on the finals, college finals?
I mean, I would say I think the fact that you brought up first, Rooster, that there wasn't a top 100 player on the Florida roster gives hope to those teams that are trying to find diamonds in the transfer portal and don't need to shell out a bunch of money. I mean, Duke was the highest paid roster in the country, and they crumbled when crunch time came. And the seasoned veterans who weren't the 5-4 or 4-star guys, they came through when it mattered. And I think that could be a paradigm going forward, let's watch.
Well, speaking of that, we may be looking at a revenue sharing formula coming up. House, what's going on with the House versus NCAA case?
I mean, you guys, like,
you sued the NCAA House?
Yes. This is my cousin Grant, who is a swimmer, Grant House at Arizona State, along with a couple of other players, brought class action antitrust lawsuit seeking basically revenue sharing. It is, if you thought from so many of our punchable faces of the NCAA, if you thought that was bad, what is about to come out of this is so much worse. You are just basically going to have a mini pro league of just younger athletes. It's going to decimate many, many sports teams. If you thought Title IX did damage to sports teams at colleges, this is going to be so much worse. Basically, what is going to happen is $2.77 billion is going to make up the settlement. The NCAA is responsible for 40% of it, and then the remaining 60% is going to come from a revenue distribution from the 32 Division I conferences over the next 10 years of $1.6 billion. What's going to happen is starting July 1st of this year, there's going to be a $20.5 million salary cap for revenue sharing at each Division I school. So every single Division I school is going to get revenue sharing going forward on a going forward basis. There's going to be back.
Can I interrupt you for saying? Yeah. Does that include NIL money?
No, does not include NIL money.
See, I think if it did, that might be part of the solution.
There's
do
still
away with the NIL and have a cap.
There's still going to be outside NIL deals of more than $600 million that's now going to be vetted by a third-party clearinghouse. There are going to be $2.77 billion in back pay to 390,000 athletes who played an NCAA sport from 2016 to 2024. NIL deals going forward have to be based on fair market value. Nobody knows what that means. Like, that's all going to be up for debate. There will be technically unlimited scholarships with new roster size limits. You'll be able to give as many scholarships as you want, but roster sizes will be smaller, which is what's going to really cut. Like, kids have already been thought that they were going to a school, and it's been pulled down. So a lot of athletes have already signed up for this. There's only 343 athletes that have opted out of this settlement. So a lot of kids want to get paid. The formula is crazy. If you thought college football was big before, you know that the future of NCAA sports is now all about college football. 75% of future revenue in this revenue sharing formula will be shared with the football players. 75%. Wow. 15% goes to men's basketball, 5% to women's basketball, and 5% to all remaining sports.
And do they share, like, what is there, like 85 scholarship players on a college team and they all share equally?
Well, that's up for debate too as to how it's shared. It's not going to necessarily be equal sharing. What's interesting is that Congress is all over this issue too, because they want to give an antitrust exemption to the NCAA. And so there's now hearings about all of this too. The bottom line to all of this is, if you thought money was already coming to NCAA sports, it's coming way, way more than ever. And like I said, you're just going to have a mini pro league dominated by football and basketball, and the Super League is coming. There's going to be a Super League of a bunch of teams. And I think, you know, Cinderellas are going to be a bygone story. You're not going to see Cinderellas in sports after this.
I agree with that, but let me throw this out and see what you think. If you are a Big East school or Gonzaga or a school like that that doesn't have a football program, and you take 75% of the $20.5 million and put it into the basketball program, and an SEC school is giving that the 75%, which is $15.4 million of the $20.5 cap, to their football program, Is that going to give the Big East and Gonzaga and teams like that a leg up on the big football schools? Or will they just make it up in NIL money?
I think they'll make it up in NIL money.
So wait, so like a Gonzaga or a Big East school without football gets the same amount as a school that has football and basketball?
It's per Division I program.
Correct.
So UConn,
that does not make a lot of
Villanova,
sense.
Georgetown, those schools are going to take 75 to 80% of their $20.5 million and put it into the basketball program.
Maybe Kevin Willard to Villanova is starting to make a little bit more sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. He's been getting a lot of
Maryland heat, but... is going to Maryland's going to take 75% of that. You know they are to compete in the Big Ten football.
You know, not that every kid plays on a football team, but they're reducing football rosters from 125 to 105. So that's 20 kids who are getting a scholarship to a big school. Those are just gone. There's thousands and thousands of scholarships that are being taken away. There was one objector to the settlement, this Gracelyn Laudermilk. She's a high school track athlete, said that she had had a scholarship and it was rescinded because of the roster limits. And that's happening all over the place. That cannot be good for amateur athletics. So more punches are going to be coming. And House is responsible for all of it. House versus NCAA.
The judge gave preliminary approval to the settlement, so we'll have to keep an eye on that.
More to come.
Pope, what are we looking forward to in the Masters this year? Anything exciting? I have to say I'm not that excited about it this year. Are you?
Well, I mean, it's just the world's greatest golf tournament. It makes its own excitement just by the fact that it's, you know, we're going to Augusta in April, and we're going to hit the CBS theme music, and it's going to feel like everything's right in the world. But a lot of the stories, though, are similar to the ones last year. I don't have my notes from last year, but I would imagine the number one story last year is, can Rory McIlroy finally get the career Grand Slam? Does he finally get a major for the first time in over a decade? I mean, I think that's the number one story. Once again, Milk, would you agree?
I don't agree, because it's a tournament that matters, and he will choke like he always does.
I know, but it's still the number one story. Another story, obviously, is can Scotty repeat and join a very elite club of people who've repeated?
McIlroy is the Mets.
And then watch for what do the LIV golfers do in this tournament. They're obviously... You've got a lot of guys with green jackets. You got Bubba, you got Rom, DJ. You're going to see, I mean, what are they going to do in this tournament? I don't know. LIV is so irrelevant right now to the golfing world that it's almost like one of them needs to compete to be relevant again. And there's some dark horses, Aberg, possible. Some people think JT is finally getting it back together. He and Scotty are in the threesome first couple days, so it'll be interesting to see how he feeds off each other.
Moose, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, you know what, when you live in the Northeast and it was minus 12 degrees overnight Celsius, and when you put the TV on today, tomorrow, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's better than the opening of baseball season because because last night I was watching baseball and it was freezing cold, but it just gives some hope, like it really does. And you see everything that's pristine green, the azaleas.
It's invigorating.
There's just so much.
It recharges your batteries.
There's hope. And
I agree, Rooster. You made an interesting point. Something feels different. I don't know what it is, because I used to get really excited about Masters Week. And I don't know if it's just over the last couple of years. I mean, Pope, do you feel... I feel like golf is like... I mean, it's on this... I don't know what... Maybe LIV has affected it more than we thought.
Sure, it's diluted the talent. No question.
There's no personality. Like,
I think Tiger...
And you don't have...
Tiger.
There's no Tiger.
There's no mystery of whether Tiger's going to play. You know, usually it's like, well, will he or won't he? But now there's no mystery. He's not playing this year.
Okay, Scheffler, he's
boring.
He's like a robot. I love him. He's good. He's an unbelievable golfer. Rory, Rom,
The best thing for Shoffley, the golfing world, Morikawa, would be for Rory. I mean,
none of these guys excite me.
For Rory to win a green jacket would be great for the golfing world.
But you know what? Sorry. Come Sunday, if it comes down to two, three guys within two shots of each other and the roars are going, it doesn't matter.
Fine. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
Moose, I'll tell you, you know, it's not just Toronto that's got this crazy weather going on.
I said the Northeast.
Pope was down here visiting me in Virginia this weekend. It was 91 degrees one day.
Yeah.
And last night we had a frost warning.
Right. Yeah. No, it's nuts. I was in Vegas last week. It was 50 degrees with a wind chill of 45.
Well, the Rangers and Cubs played last night. It was freezing in the first pitch.
Yeah, it was 37 degrees in Boston and raining when the first pitch with the Jays and Red Sox.
House,
what do you think? I haven't heard you on the Masters yet, House.
So, you know, our audience knows that every year we play in the fantasy golf majors.
Oh, yeah, man.
And I've dominated that of late. And so I'm a little reticent to give my picks right now because then you guys are just going to copy them. But right. I feel like I also owe it to the audience. I'm just going to say, you can copy it now.
Cousin Justin, cover your ears right now.
Everybody here, cover their ears. I know he hasn't played great of late, but you're going to hear from Ludvig Åberg at this tournament.
I mentioned him as a dark horse.
You are going to hear from Åberg. And I think I agree with you guys that it must be something about just like the PGA tournament in the last year or two, not really like feeling like coalesced because of LIV. And I feel like that's taking a little bit away from the Masters, but I also agree with Moose that like come Sunday with the roars of whatever that leaderboard is, the Masters is going to be the Masters. The course is the star and someone's going to be playing great. And it might be Åberg.
I mean, imagine a DeChambeau Scotty Rory shootout on Sunday in the back nine. That would be epic.
I think Bryson's out though, isn't he?
Bryson has no chance.
He's the guy that hits a driver wedge on the par five.
I don't think he has a chance. As long as it's not Rory, I'm fine. Who's Canada's favorite? Corey Connors?
There's Corey Connors. There's Tyler Pendrith. There's a few guys that have come along though. I don't think a Canadian's going to win this thing. But you know what? You never know. Like, never thought in my wildest dreams that Mike Weir was going to win the Masters. So, who knows?
You had your show with friggin' Ovi. It's not all about Canada.
Ovi's Russian, so.
Tommy Fleetwood, the Geico caveman.
I'd like to see Fleetwood, and I'd like to see Lowry make a run.
Yeah.
That would be exciting.
I love Shane Lowry.
Yeah, Lowry's great. Lowry's great for golf.
The only guy I really hate on the tour is Patrick Reed.
No, yeah.
Is he even relevant anymore?
No.
After you get caught cheating twice on the golf course, that's it.
I mean, that's the other thing that, like, we used to be able to look forward to people like DJ and JT and Spieth. That made the Masters really exciting. I don't think any of us think that DJ or Spieth, maybe JT, are really going to be in the mix. And they brought something to this.
Yeah, right. You know what? Spieth, I can see, like, there's something about Spieth that I don't think he'll win, but he's got the ability to compete for two or three days. And he'll make it exciting if he's up there.
He'll be struggling to make the cut.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. let's knock somebody out. Milk, Toby, you have a punchable face.
Do you guys, Rooster, congrats again on UConn. In order to watch that, you may recall that you had to turn on that game on Sunday at 3 p.m.
Yep.
I just think that's awful. Like, I don't know how you can say that we're going to give a stage where in prime time we're going to attract people to the women's game and grow it. And I don't remember what time the Caitlin Clark game was last year.
Same time. It was in the afternoon on Sunday.
That's a problem. That is a problem. I mean, I think these women athletes, I think the sport, I think it deserves to be in prime time. And whoever's behind that decision, whether it's ESPN or the NCAA or whoever it is deserving of a punch.
Can we move the prime time up to 7 Eastern?
Jeff, please. Please.
Yeah, the Final Four ended after midnight. I was actually on the Eastern time zone for once. I was like, that is ridiculous.
You know, the way you keep interest in sports is to grow it through young fans, and they, you know, you can't be having games on way past their bedtime.
Yeah.
The All Super right. Bowl has it right. Put the game on at 6:30.
Mm-hmm. Good right. job. Right. Anybody else have a punch? All right. How about a lasso? I've got a lasso. Anyone have a lasso they want to do first? I'm going to give a lasso to J.B. Bickerstaff, an NBA lifer whose dad, Bernie, was a coach. J.B. first became an interim head coach in 2004 and has had a very mediocre career to date. You know, he's got a like 4.468 winning percentage as head coach. He's 255 and 290. But he took over the Pistons after the Pistons spent all this money on the guy from Phoenix.
Monty Williams,
and had to get rid of him. And then they got JB in there. And somehow he's made it gel and taken this team that won 14 games all of last year, tripled their win total this year, and has them positioned to be a fifth or sixth seed in the playoffs in the East, which is amazing. And the most remarkable turnaround in the history of the league. He's mixed a really good core of young players led by Cade Cunningham and Ausar Thompson with some old vets who did, you know, were having problems with other head coaches and have sort of coalesced on this team.
Is there a former Sixer on that team?
Yeah, a guy named Tobias Harris playing very well on this team. Malik Beasley, Tim Hardaway Jr., Pope, you had him.
Of course.
On Dallas, and Dennis Schroeder, who just couldn't to stay long enough, you know,
anywhere
without getting into a fight with his coach. They're all playing great together, and I mean, this team could scare some big name teams in the playoffs the way they're playing. So good for JB. Anybody else? Who's got a buzzer beater?
Let's go buzzer with NBA. I don't think you guys talked about it yet, but what the fuck happened in Denver?
Oh, we did talk.
Right. You did talk about it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, my other buzzer then is, and I haven't mentioned it in probably a month, so I get to mention it, but Luka returns on tomorrow night to Dallas. First game since he got unceremoniously dumped by his beloved Mavericks and their fans. It's going to be really, really interesting to see what kind of response he's going to get. Big time ovation. I think lots of boos for anybody who looks like Nico or the big fat owner Dumont guy. And this is the last week of the NBA before playoffs start next week. So lots of playoff slots still to be determined.
Anyone else?
Why did Denver fire their coach, by the way? What is the reasoning?
They fired the GM and the coach.
Weren't they like, don't they have a winning record? And they're,
well, yeah, they're fourth in the conference.
They're in playoffs.
They're only half game ahead, but they're right now, they're going to be hosting first round.
Their second best player was hurt most of the year.
You got to figure that one of the players wasn't getting along with them, or two of the players, because.
Well, there's only one that could move the
beat. Right. I'm not naming names here, but I'm just saying.
And his brothers, they probably threatened
him. I don't know, but that's the only thing that makes some sense. With what, five games to go?
Makes no sense at all. None. Moose, you go, because I may steal yours if I go first. Go ahead. You got a buzzer?
No.
I just wanted to congratulate your guy, Vlad, for finally getting his payday. $500 million to Vlad Guerrero Jr. over 14 years. That's great for him, and Toronto got it right, I think.
And none of the money is deferred. There's no opt out. It is 14 years straight. Now, whether they trade him or not, who knows? At some point, but there's no deferral on this. This is $500 million, and I can imagine by the time this contract ends, what the price of our seats are going to be at the Jays games. But now we just got it. Look at Milkett. Now we got to sign Bo Bichette. We got to keep these two together and make Milk a Jays fan for life.
So he's going to make approximately $36 million a year for 14 years.
Yep.
Is he actually going to get paid that, or is it deferred?
No, it's not.
Does he not listen?
Apparently not.
No, none of it's deferred. And did you know that Vladdy is actually Canadian as well? Because he was born in Montreal.
Just like Ted Cruz.
Hey, the curse is real. If you want to know why Cougars lost last night, Ted Cruz showed up, and of course the curse.
Quick buzzer beater that is a quasi pour out. I don't know if you guys saw the very sad news today of Octavio Dotel.
Yeah, former Jays pitcher,
kind of like a journeyman pitcher on like 13 different teams, a lot with the Cardinals, 15. Seasons. There was a terrible roof collapse in a Dominican Republic nightclub, and he was in that club, and at the age of I think 51, attending a merengue concert, died. And so here's to the Dotel family and Octavio Dotel on a very, very good answer on our baseball immaculate grid game two with 13 different teams.
Some of you might remember Greg Millen, the goalie who played with Hartford, Chicago, St. Louis, passed away last night at the age of 67. Oof. So, not good.
Also, arrivederci to Kevin De Bruyne. Man City elected not to re-sign him after his illustrious career there. And there's rumors that he may come play for
Philly?
Miami.
Inter Miami.
Yeah, why not? Ah. Stack Miami.
I mean, Messi and De Bruyne on the same team?
Yeah.
But wait, how old are these guys now?
It doesn't matter. They're at 45, they'll be better than all these plumbers.
That's true. His problem is injuries, not age.
My buzzer beater, since we have Moose on, is I'd like all eyes on the Atlantic Division of the Eastern Conference tomorrow night as the Lightning host the Toronto Maple Leafs in a massive showdown that might decide the Atlantic Division.
It might.
I will be there. I can't wait.
Oh, I hope you are. Are you going to be
and
there?
I got to start texting. Going to be texting you all night long.
Excellent.
All right. Don't be greedy, Milk.
I feel like a champion. Let's go.
There's only one dinner.
All right, fellas. Good show. Good to see everyone. We
hope to see
Bison
back soon. Thanks for joining you guys. Sorry about the chair.
Thanks for coming on, Moose.
Later.
See ya.